Rebecca B was supposed to give the Dharma talk this morning, but she could not be here, and I volunteered to take her place. And when I did so, I was not aware of the passing of Justice Ginsburg. And so my talk is not going to address my own feelings about this unhappy event. But since I am seeking refuge in the out of doors, and a number of people have also expressed that sentiment, perhaps the talk will meet a need, at least in part, since it is going to be about walking in the out of doors. There seems to me to be a strong connection between Zen and walking, and lots of names come to mind: Hanshan, Basho, Dogen, Gary Snyder, Thoreau. I'm thinking of Hanshan, who was a 9th-century hermit who lived in a cave, but he had a friend in a nearby monastery, and there was only one way to get there for him to visit Shite, who was also a poet. Basho, the 17th-century haiku master, walked the length and breadth of Japan and has a number of travelogues, a famous one called The Narrow Road to the Deep North, which is prose interspersed with haiku. And I imagine that many of you have seen the film about Dogen, which is on YouTube. There is a wonderful scene in which Dogen went, of course, from Japan to China by ship to seek a teacher, but once he got there, he had to walk. And there is a wonderful scene in which he is walking with his possessions on his back. He's wearing a rack suit just like ours, and he encounters the Tenzo from a local monastery who gave him a very valuable teaching. And this teaching is expressed in Dogen's famous essay, Instructions for the Cook. So I am very fond of walking. And maybe I've had to be, because I grew up in part on a small island, 7 miles by 3 miles off the coast, the southwest coast of Ireland. And there were very few cars on this island. It was really a hazardous undertaking to bring a car over there. And so we walked everywhere, to the grocery, which doubled as a pub, to the makeshift, movie theater, to the beach, such as it was. And so I was used to walking. And when I moved away and went to college, I used to drive from Cork City to the west of Ireland every weekend to go walking in the mountains. And you could walk in the mountains all day and you would never meet anybody. And when I came over here, I began to walk in the White Mountains, and I had to get used to meeting people in the mountains. I wasn't used to that. Since the pandemic, my style has been a little bit cramped. I haven't been on the AT this year, but I keep my hand in and my feet by going to Prospect Hill Park in Waltham and to the Middlesex Fells. So I was walking in the fells last week. And I find that since I have to walk alone, I like to walk alone. And I am asking myself the question, what is my practice in the woods? Now, Thoreau has a wonderful essay on walking in which he gives some advice. He says, "In my walks, I would fain return to my senses." He says, "What good is it for me to be in the woods if I am thinking of something out of the woods? What good is it for me to be in the woods if I'm thinking of something out of the woods?" Now, that's an attractive piece of advice at first blush, and well and good if it gets me into the woods. But what I find is that I can't live up to that. And these days when I walk, I'm at an age where I really have to look where I'm putting my feet. And so when I walk in the woods, my koan, my practice is rocks and roots and earths and stones, because that's where I'm looking. And I find that I can be very absorbed in what is underneath my feet. And then, of course, I'm thinking. And I'm thinking about what I said or did not say to somebody. I'm thinking about the book I'm reading. I'm thinking about my next Dharma talk. And so I'm out of the woods. And what I find in a day's hike is that the absorption or the awareness of the woods seems to tail off as I walk. And it's replaced by a kind of exhaustion or tiredness, not just physical, but mental, which seems to be due to this effort to remain in the woods, to remain aware of the rocks and roots and stones and the woods around me, canopy of trees. But wait a minute, I say, because the effort to remain aware of my surroundings, to remain in my senses, that doesn't seem to be our way, because our way is turning toward. Our way is to give ourselves to whatever happens to arise, to allow it, to let it be. And so even if that whatever happens to arise is something out of the woods, so that's my practice in the woods, as anywhere else, to become aware, to turn toward whatever happens to arise. Now, sometimes when I'm walking, I ask myself the question, is Zen hard or is it easy? Because there is this, it's clear to me, it has become clear to me that to devote myself to remaining in my senses, to try and cultivate this unbroken awareness of the woods, is a wrong-headed effort. This is not what's required. This is not our way of practice. But if I remember, as Kazan says, this is not a practice you can do. I love that statement. This is not a practice you can do. And sometimes I think of the monks sitting there listening to him, young, inexperienced monks, and they're saying, what is he saying? This is not a practice you can do. Then if I remember this, I notice that there are these moments of choice that arise as I am walking, as I am in the woods, and then it's possible to turn toward them, whatever they happen to be. And they are discrete moments. It's not a kind of unbroken awareness, but it's possible perhaps to string them together. But even as I say this, to string them together, that's not necessary. It's only necessary to take advantage of one of them, the one that happens to be here. One of my favorite haikus by Basho goes as follows in one translation. Even in Kyoto, I long for Kyoto when the cuckoo sings. Even in Kyoto, the famous city of temples, I long for Kyoto when the cuckoo sings. presumably in the springtime. For me, this expresses, it expresses what we call dukkha, which is sometimes translated as suffering, but really it's more useful here for me to think about it as dissatisfaction, the dissatisfaction that underlies all human experience. Even in Kyoto, I long for Kyoto. Even in the woods, I long for the woods. And what's with that? But again, this is our practice that I bring this with me. And if this longing arises, this dissatisfaction, this inability to be satisfied with the fact that I've managed to get myself into the woods and here I am benefiting from it. If that arises, then that is what arises. Something out of the woods, perhaps, but yet the content of my experience. And I'm thinking of a reading. I'm on the way, I sometimes think to myself when I'm walking in a number of different senses. But really, it's, and I have the sense that, attainment is important to me, or some kind of arrival at the ideal state. But actually, that is not necessary. There is no end. In the Buddhist world, there is no end, is what Katagiri says. And so it's not necessary to arrive. It's just necessary to continue. Again, I'm thinking also of a quotation by Uchiyama, who says, your true self is the entire world. So that really, I have a strong desire when I walk to complete a circuit or to get to the top and down again, but none of that is really necessary. And at this time where I'm unable to go into the mountains, but must confine myself to walks which are nearer and less ambitious, this is a very good thing for me to remember. And it also gives me a little bit of a handle on something that has always puzzled me. Dogen's practice and realization are not two. So I think of it in this way, that if I can even explain it in words, but anyway, I am in the woods, and what arises is a longing for the woods. So my practice is to turn toward this longing for the woods. And I realize that I am in the woods longing for the woods, so that there is no separation between my practice and my realization. That's how I explain it to myself after the fact. So a couple of weeks ago, I was walking in the fells, and I was walking alone, and I heard a sound behind me, like somebody hitting a tree with a sledge or an axe. And I turned around, and there was a pileated woodpecker on a tree about 20 yards away. Now, a little bit of backstory. I used to be an avid, not to say a crazed, bird watcher. And I would go out every spring during the spring migration looking for to add to my life list, so that I would pass by warblers that I had seen many times, though very beautiful, in search of the ones that I hadn't seen. And then I developed eye problems, and I was so frustrated that I no longer took binoculars into the woods. So now I no longer go out during spring migration because I can't see very well. But this particular, on this occasion, a couple of weeks ago, this bird was so close that I didn't even need the binoculars. And so I really got to spend some quality time with the bird. And it was a kind of a reflection upon the way I used to look at birds, which was in a very kind of cursory fashion, checking off the list. And I noticed that it's got this beautiful red head, and I noticed that it's got a formidable beak. And I noticed that apparently all woodpeckers do this. It's balancing itself against the trunk with its tail. That's how woodpeckers hold themselves in place. And then it flew to another tree, and suddenly there are two of them. And when you see this bird fly, Sibley says it's got a 2.5 foot wingspan. That is huge for a woodpecker. That is not a small bird. And I had this wonderful moment of realization. I thought to myself, it's really true. It's really true. Birds have evolved from dinosaurs, because this bird looks for all the world like a living pterodactyl. That's really what it looks like, a pileated woodpecker. And so I had this moment, you know, here I am looking at the pileated, and I'm not even longing for the pileated. So a little encounter in the woods. When I walk in the woods, I frequently talk to myself. You know, I recite lines of poetry, or I repeat phrases that have intrigued me. And I notice that one of the phrases that I repeat is, "The road goes ever on," which is, of course, Bilbo's song in The Hobbit, or Frodo's in The Lord of the Rings, which I read before those movies were ever dreamed of and before those songs were set to music. The road goes ever on. And you know, it's very applicable to my practice, because while I have this longing for attainment and closure, what is it that I think, you know, that I'm going to become some kind of finished Buddhist floating in emptiness with my hands in mudra, and that will be the end of the story? That really is not where I am going. And there is really no need to go there. The moral of the story perhaps is that if I'm practicing in this way without seeking some particular closure or some special state, but only looking to become one, then it doesn't matter where I am, I'm always at home, no matter where I roam. Thank you.
So everyone, please sit comfortably and be invited into our practice of Dharma dialogue. Questions, comments, resonances. We have several pieces in our sutra book related to walking. Pierce had us read one today, which reminds us to take one step like an elephant or a turtle. One of the first Buddhist nuns also says, gives us advice on how to walk across a flood. You cross calmly, one step at a time, feeling for stones, or not at all. Brad.
Thanks, Pierce. That was fabulous. You know, Janet and I, a long time ago, we were lucky to find a house that's right on the state park in Ashland for a reasonable price. And, you know, so sometimes we forget we can just go out the back door into the state park and walk in the woods. We try to do it as much as possible. We have a good friend, a Buddhist monk named Ajahn Suchito. And his strong recommendation at all times is to do aimless wandering. So he just goes out the door with no intention of where he's going and just keeps walking. One time he got lost in a giant rainstorm out back, but It is, I too have to pay attention to where I'm putting my feet. And the secret I found is I got those poles that look like ski poles without the ends on them. Those have been a huge help. Thank you very much. It's just so good to see all of you.
I just have to say that I have a pair of poles also, but at the moment I'm resisting the idea of using two of them. I only use one. But that's common.
Laura.
Thank you so much, Pierce. When you mentioned walking, what came into my mind was Kinhen. And I practice Kinhen in this space where I am at home. And I have these little aisles that are between the piles of U-Haul boxes that came over with me at the end of emptying out the old house. So I do my Kinhen in and out of these little little trails. They are little trails, you know, very narrow with the big piles. And so that was a lovely connection. And also the last thing that you said about no matter where you are wandering, your home, and that really spoke to me in a beautiful, gentle and loving remindering kind of way that even this anxiety, even this fear, even this grief, even this muddiness, messiness, overwhelmness, whatever it is, all of those things have been arising for me, and that I'm always home. That I'm always home, and that for me that brings up that word home brings up a lot of things, of course. But one of them is the comfort of my my rocking chair, being home with whatever is here. Yeah, thank you so much, Pierce.
And Laura, that makes me recognize that even at home, I long for coming home. Karen.
Thank you, Pierce. That felt, I felt like that was a respite. I felt like we were going on a walk in the woods. And what I appreciated was your talking about being in the woods and longing for the woods, and then the pileated woodpecker not longing for a pileated woodpecker and not making one better than the other. Like, because I would naturally think it would be better not to be longing for the woods while in the woods, and I would berate myself for longing for the woods while in the woods. And I appreciated also that many times you said our way. This is our way, because it was very family. It reminded me of that reading that we have in the liturgy book, our way is a family way. When hungry, we eat. When tired, we rest. Like, very, just a reminder of how holding this practice is. It's not about getting to a certain place. It's like holding wherever we are. I felt really held by your talk today. And at the beginning, when you said that you planned this talk before you found out about RBG, I even felt held by that, that pointing to that. I felt like this was a lovely talk for this morning. Thank you.
Vincent.
Sorry, my audio had cut out a little bit earlier, so I wasn't sure. I missed some of Karen's talk, but I just wanted to say thank you to Pierce for allowing my walks or whatever treatments I might want to bring to my grief to just be whatever comes up, that a walk doesn't have to be just this kind of aversion to any feelings that I might be having or things going on, that it can be both a walk and all the things that come up for me when I'm doing that.
Cheryl.
Thank you so much for your talk, Pierce. But I had a completely different take than you did on the haiku of even in Kyoto, I'm longing for Kyoto, because in my mind, I was more equating the longing with loving, and it put a whole different angle on everything. It's like, you know, even in the woods, I'm loving the woods. Like, I'm just absorbing it so much that I'm just loving it all the more. And I really enjoyed all that you had to say about the turning toward, because, you know, you realize loving, longing, it's all part of the same wonderful experience when you're very immersed in what you're doing. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Cheryl. What is longing if not also loving?
And what is grieving if not also loving? And feeling an absence is feeling a presence. Luis.
Hey, everyone. Cheryl, I really appreciated that that double lens. And thank you so much, Pierce, for bringing the start of this conversation. I think now that I'm sitting with Cheryl's words, the longing and the loving, I'm connecting it to what Karen said as well around how being in the woods, you don't have to prioritize like the experiences or the sensations. And I think I'm connecting it because sometimes when I think of longing, I did take it as like this striving for something or wishing for something, even if when you're experiencing it yourself. And then thinking about it in terms of love is highlighting the uselessness of like the comparison. Like if you just kind of realize that the longing itself is the love, and the way that your talk landed on me was how the practice and the insight in that similar like collapsing into itself can happen, where the thoughts that get primed, rather than having this, oh, these are like longings or these are things that I should be moving away from or trying to get rid of, they become in the woods just the manifestation of the woods in thought form. And it's like the movement and the feeling become embodied, not just in the body, but then kind of flowing through the mind. And it's part of your practice itself. Yeah, I like that. So thank you so much, Pierce.
Harry.
Thank you, Pierce. And thank you, everyone, for your words. I'm always deeply moved by our Dharma dialogue. And Pierce, what you deeply reminded me of is that this is a journey. Despite my insistence that I have to arrive at a spot where everything will be okay. And you're pointing to Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit reminded me of Led Zeppelin's song Ramble On, which is based on Frodo or whatever, I forget their names. It reminds me of how in our liturgy somewhere, I forget where, our practice is not remote. In this particular instance, at least for me, it's very personal. And somehow it's all come back around to Led Zeppelin. So thank you for reminding me to just ramble on. I appreciate it deeply.
You're referencing the other part of the line that Karen brought up. Our family style is not remote. When hungry, we let our mouths eat. When tired, we stretch out and sleep. Jim.
So thank you very much, Pierce. I was following your journey as you said that you start off into the woods and you're aware of the woods. And then as you move on, you begin to forget the woods because you're thinking of things outside the woods. And I was very much identifying because since moving to Rochester, I've begun not so much walking, but jogging through the woods. And in particular, through this beautiful Mount Hope Cemetery, one of those 19th century cemeteries with hills and trees. And the first few times jogging there, I was just absorbing everything and seeing monuments and trees. And then the more that I jogged, the less that I was paying attention to it, because then my mind began to wander. And then I sprained my ankle. And so your question, is Zen easier or hard? It was both easy and hard. And my question for you, Pierce, is when in a sprained ankle, do I yearn or long for a sprained ankle?
I don't think anybody would. In regard to the longing, that is something that perhaps comes for me out of the sense of being separate. But I think that this reading that Laura brought to my attention, Leap into Grace, is very helpful to me, because it suggests that a way of addressing this through practice. You know, it says sooner or later you're going to have to take what my father used to call the high jump, meaning come to the end of this body and mind. And so why don't you practice a little bit letting go, you know, letting yourself go into this totality. So I find this very helpful. And I suppose that, the pain of a sprained ankle would be just a part of that rather than the whole thing if it were to happen, which God forbid.
And I would just point to another piece in our liturgy book, Liberation from All Obstruction, which says, when burning, I choose heat. When freezing, I choose cold. When grieving, I choose sorrow. And so when in pain of a sprained ankle, perhaps longing for that pain may be too high a bar, but we can nonetheless choose it and turn toward it, as Pierce would say. And so in closing, I want to point to another text on walking in our sutra book called Oneness by Thich Nhat Hanh. The ground we tread today transcends history. Spring and winter are both present in this moment. The young leaf and the dead leaf are really one. Our feet touch deathlessness, and my feet are yours. Let us walk together now. Let us enter the dimension of oneness and see the cherry tree blossom in winter. Thank you, Pierce. Thank you, everyone.